Audio Companion, Episode 3, The Policy Professional. For legislative staff, budget analysts, and economists who want the mechanics, the fiscal math, and an honest map of what still needs credentialed review. Welcome. This is the audio companion to the We the People platform, a citizen-built blueprint for federal policy reform. The standing disclosure first. This episode is read by a text-to-speech voice, not a human narrator, and the words are drawn directly from the platform's own documents. Nothing is invented for the audio. This third episode follows the policy professional path. It's the most technical of the series, written for the people who read policy for a living, legislative staff, agency analysts, budget scorers, and economists. If the earlier episodes answered what does this mean for me, this one answers a harder set of questions. How is it actually funded? What are the mechanisms? Where is it legislatively vulnerable? And what has its author deliberately left open for outside experts to settle? We'll take those in order. Start with the money, because for this audience, it's the whole ballgame. The platform funds itself from four distinct streams, and keeping them distinct is central to the design. First, payroll-based contributions, a combined 1% payroll contribution, split 0.6% from the employer and 0.4% from the employee, which generates roughly $250 billion a year in steady state. Second, a wealth surcharge on net worth above high thresholds. Third, sovereign fund returns, the investment income from the accumulated national fund, which starts small and grows over the decades. And fourth, dedicated pools earmarked for specific programs, such as paid family leave. The reason to separate these matters for a budget analyst. The annual payroll streams fund the recurring universal coverage pillars, the predictable year-to-year obligations. The sovereign fund is capitalized separately and is not rated for annual spending. It's allowed to compound. At mature scale, once the fund corpus reaches its projected $122 trillion, its disbursements contribute on the order of $2.7 trillion a year to the consolidated picture. So the architecture is deliberately two-layered, a pay-as-you-go layer for annual services and a capitalized sovereign layer for the long horizon. One design detail worth flagging, because it's the kind of thing a scorer notices. The platform documents its parameters as recalibrated on a three-year smooth moving average, rather than reset annually to the latest single-year figure. That smoothing is deliberate. It dampens volatility, so a single anomalous year doesn't whipsaw contribution rates or benefit levels. Paired with that, the design includes circuit breakers and a phased, gated rollout, meaning later phases activate only when defined stability conditions are met, not on a fixed political calendar. Now, a mechanism that's easy to misread if you come at it as just another minimum wage, because it isn't one. The platform's regional wage floor is structured as tax architecture, not a blunt mandate. The floor for each occupation in each region is set at the 25th percentile of that occupation's local wage distribution. Read the consequence carefully. Because the floor sits at the 25th percentile, it binds only on employers who are already paying below the bottom quarter of their own peer set. An employer paying at or above the local median for a job is entirely unaffected. The platform's framing is pointed. An employer arguing the floor is too high is, in effect, arguing against the market rate that three-quarters of their competitors already meet. Mechanically, it's designed to ride on infrastructure that already exists. Employers already report wages, worker classifications, and identifying information on standard payroll tax forms. The platform notes that adding an occupational classification field to that existing reporting is administratively minor rather than a new bureaucracy. And where a worker sits below their floor, the gap is handled through the tax and surcharge system rather than a separate enforcement apparatus. It's engineered to be industry-aware by construction. Different industries have different cost structures and therefore different wage distributions. And because each floor is derived from its own occupation's distribution, the floors reflect those real differences automatically. For this audience, a claim is only as good as its source, so the platform stakes a lot on provenance. The wage figures come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, specifically the Occupational Employment and Wage Statistics Program, the federal government's authoritative source for occupational wage data. The floors use the 25th percentile figure from that dataset at the occupation by metropolitan area level, recalibrated on that same smooth three-year moving average. Here's the part that distinguishes it from ordinary policy writing. The platform doesn't just cite the source, it archives it. The verbatim BLS source file is stored as a dated snapshot with cryptographic checksums, using the SHA-256 standard, so any analyst can confirm that the numbers on the site are the exact numbers pulled from the government release, unaltered. The methodology document is candid about coverage, too. It distinguishes the occupations backed by real BLS detail from a smaller set that display illustrative figures where no matching federal detail exists, and it labels which is which rather than blurring them together. For a budget analyst, that combination, an authoritative source, a sealed copy, and an explicit, honest account of coverage gaps, is the difference between a number you can take into a meeting and one you can't. An honest tour for this audience has to name where the plan is hard, and the platform's own analysis does exactly that. Three friction points stand out. First, the transition problem. During the first 10 to 20 years, the country would fund existing obligations, Medicare, Social Security, debt interest, while simultaneously standing up the new universal pillars and walling off the wealth tax revenue so the sovereign fund can compound untouched. That temporal mismatch, paying legacy and new costs at once before the fund's returns mature, is the single most demanding stretch, and it's where a scorer will focus. Second, the constitutional question on the wealth component. Given current Supreme Court jurisprudence, the taxation of unrealized net worth is legally contested, and an adverse ruling could impair the fund's capitalization. The platform treats this as a live legal question, not a settled one. Third, the time horizon mismatch with how legislatures actually work. Staff operate in 2-year election cycles and 10-year budget windows. A 60-year sovereign fund horizon asks for a kind of intergenerational commitment that the modern process isn't built to sustain. The platform doesn't pretend this away. Its phased, gated, circuit-breakered structure is, in part, an attempt to make a long-horizon plan survivable inside short-horizon politics. And this is where the platform earns a policy professional's attention rather than just asking for it. It maintains a tracked issues registry, a running public list of every unresolved question, each one tagged with the specific kind of expertise it needs and how it might be resolved. As of this recording, that registry holds well over 100 open items alongside the ones already closed. Crucially for this audience, it names the institutions and disciplines by role. It flags that the fiscal projections still need independent scoring by bodies of the caliber of the Joint Committee on Taxation, the Tax Policy Center, or a comparable microsimulation shop, rather than resting on the author's own arithmetic. It flags the actuarial questions on the retirement math. It flags the constitutional and legal questions for legal scholars. And it logs the external reviews it has already sought. Think about what that means procedurally. The platform is handing a legislative analyst a pre-built map of exactly which questions to route to which office, and it's telling you plainly which of its own numbers have not yet been independently certified. That's not the posture of a proposal trying to survive scrutiny. It's the posture of one built to invite it. So that's the technical tour. For funding streams, deliberately layered into a pay-as-you-go tier and a capitalized sovereign tier. A wage floor engineered as tax architecture that binds only on below-market employers. Provenance sealed with cryptographic checksums. A frank accounting of the transition, constitutional, and time horizon risks, and a public registry that routes its own unresolved questions to the right experts. You don't have to find it feasible to find it unusually legible. Most proposals ask you to trust a conclusion. This one hands you the mechanisms, the sources, and the list of its own unfinished business, and invites you to score it yourself at wethepeopleplatform.com. And if you do, one request. A proposal like this has no lobby and no ad budget behind it. It travels only by word of mouth from people who take it seriously. If it survived your scrutiny well enough to be worth a colleague's time, forward it to one. Rigorous ideas deserve to be seen, and attention is the whole battle. Thanks for listening. This has been the audio companion to the We the People platform, found at wethepeopleplatform.com. The next episode follows the path built for the skeptical reader, the one that leads with the strongest objections first.